This is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard DJ's Aviation Podcast. This is your home for everything aviation, from the latest news on aircraft, airlines, and airports, to documenting travel journeys unlike any other across the globe. Be sure to check out our second YouTube channel, Globetrotting at DJ's Aviation, where you'll find analytically driven coverage of the industry, which aims to answer your most burning questions. But for now, we're next in line for takeoff. So I'll pass you over to our host for today's proceedings, Dan.
A very warm welcome back to the podcast. Continuing with the story of traveling around the world, I believe last time I left you off, I was arriving into Berlin to take my next flight. And if you didn't get the chance to listen to the previous episode, well, coverage was on my first time in Germany, which was a lot of fun, spoilers. But if you haven't already listened to that episode, you're more than welcome to go back and listen. That one is titled Plane Spotting in Germany. And of course, since my last podcast, a couple of people have taken the time to review it over on Spotify, so I can't thank you all enough for doing that. It is greatly appreciated. So, to recap what the day had been before I ended the podcast, just so to catch you all up, I had boarded a train from Frankfurt Airport all the way to Berlin, which was a lot of fun, seeing a lot of the scenery of Germany and such. And arrived into the central station of Berlin to make a change to Berlin Brandenburg. And I said I made that realization, I believe at least I said it, that Berlin looked like a place I really wanted to visit. Of course, I had been in Frankfurt for about 4 days and was only there really to plane spot. However, I said that if I had the opportunity to visit Germany again, I think Berlin is a place I'd want to actually explore more so as a tourist. So with that being said, I made the interchange at the central station and headed towards Berlin Brandenburg. This train is one that was destined for there, and I was basically getting on at the last stop before the airport. So while it was about a 25-minute journey, there were no more stops, and it was pretty busy to say the least. A lot of people with suitcases, but overall, still a lot of space, as it was a three-story train, so you had the upper level, the middle level, and the lower level, which I thought was honestly pretty cool. Sydney has somewhat similar, not three stories, but definitely somewhat similar, whereas here in Melbourne, we just have our single-story seats, similar to the London Underground system. So, as I said, I'd never flown through Berlin, Brandenburg, even visited Berlin, period, so I was interested to see what the airport was going to be like, and I was pleasantly surprised. In fact, I'll go out and say that Berlin Brandenburg's probably on my top three airports that I've had the pleasure of passing through. I arrived pretty early. I'm just going through my photos from the day to be able to better see timings and so forth and understand what my day kind of consisted of. The first thing I did was go to their dedicated viewing deck, which is the brilliant thing. You do not need to already be checked in to go to this viewing deck. So you're able to just head to Berlin Brandenburg, pay the fee, which I think from memory was 2 or 3 euros, go through the barrier, and then very simply go up a flight of stairs or an elevator, and then you arrive at the massive viewing deck. And I was pleasantly surprised with how much space. I don't know how busy this viewing deck gets in the summer, as I was traveling through in March, where, spoilers a little bit later, it was actually snowing with rain. So I can't imagine in the winter it's the most popular spot, but it was mostly deserted, and I would find it hard to imagine that it would ever truly fill up. Because, like I said, it's a huge space, which is awesome, though, because you're able to get different views of all the aircraft parked up. And I was able to see many different planes for the very first time, including Iceland Air and their 757, which I was very, very excited to be able to see with my own eyes. I feel like Iceland Air has been one of those airlines that I've continuously attempted to catch, but just haven't been able to. And I was even lucky enough to stick around long enough for it to push back, pardon me. So that was very nice to see. But of course, one of the major reasons why I went up there was to get a shot of my plane for that evening. As some of you may know and some of you may not, yes, I was boarding my first ever Norse Atlantic Airways flight from Berlin to New York JFK, the low-cost airline that recently joined the market with their 787 in economy. So Again, following on with the theme of trying to make the travel as cheap as possible, it turned out catching a train and flying North Atlantic through to New York JFK was actually going to be the cheapest solution to get to the United States. The reason I'm heading to the United States is I had a voucher that needed to be used, so I was trying to link up the travels to use that voucher. And North Atlantic Airways was so, like, I can't express how much cheaper they were in comparison to your Lufthansa, Condor, straight from Frankfurt, even something like a Delta. That Norse were just so cheap, and it became hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of euros even cheaper to go up to Berlin, catch Norse, and end up in JFK. So I thought, why not? I'll save all those hundreds, I'll get a train ride, and I'll try out a new carrier and a new airport. And honestly, after that Lufthansa experience, which is now live on Globetrotting, the YouTube channel, so you're more than welcome to go and watch the video review. I'm pretty happy I ended up going with Norse instead of continuing on with Lufthansa, because I don't think I would have wanted to do another flight with them. So I spent a lot of time on the viewing deck recording clips, because again, this Norse flight is one I was documenting for a flight review that will be coming out only in a few days, so definitely stay tuned for that. Next on the list was bag drop. Funny story about trying to get into the viewing deck. I hadn't checked my bag yet, as the bag drop hadn't opened up. So basically, in typical me fashion, I tried to wheel my bag through while paying, and then the bag got stuck on the other side, and then there was no one to help me, so I had to pay again. So basically, I paid twice. You're welcome, Berlin. I paid twice to get into the viewing deck because the bag got stuck, and yeah, I wasn't really thinking. I was tired, but it was pretty funny. Even at the time, I just was like, oh, this is so typical, but it wasn't the end of the world. Bag drop opened up, I believe, just after 3 p.m. for a 6:30 flight. I did try and take a picture. Well, I successfully took a picture of the Norse Atlantic sign that was above the check-in desk before they got annoyed that I was taking a photo of check-in. I'm not sure if this is a new thing. I don't know. Like, I've been to many airports, and basically none of them really care. But when I was in Berlin, they didn't want anyone, and it wasn't just me. Someone else was trying to take a picture, just, I think, of the airport, and they got told off saying, oh, don't do that. So I found that odd, but it is what it is. I still got my video and still got my picture, but I was surprised that you're not allowed to do that anymore. But hey, I guess the times change. I'm not sure if other airports are doing this, and maybe I just haven't traveled through them, but definitely this was the case when I was trying to drop my bag in Berlin. It was a relatively quick process, as I was one of the first in the queue because I'd got on there so early. Overall thoughts on Berlin Brandenburg before security. I really, really like it. I love the way the check-in desks are almost symmetrical one after the other and do all look the same with that lovely wood feel, if you will. There is lots of space at each designated bag drop, and it doesn't feel like they're overflowing into the walkways, which is a major problem at a lot of other airports. Given this is being a very new terminal, if you will, I can understand why they're probably one up on, say, another airport that I've flown through, but obviously a quick observation is that it's much more efficient how they line the people up. Instead of at a normal bag drop, there's not enough, I don't know, there's just not enough space, and then it creeps into the walkway, and then you deal with them blocking the walkway and the staff being frustrated and then the passengers being frustrated and then no one can walk. It is kind of like a domino effect, but I really did like this. Passing through security, I honestly was surprised at how much walking you do have to do past security and then past duty free. So normally, as you know, you walk a lot in airports, whether you're running to gates, whether you're looking around, but it feels like you're actually walking as you're going somewhere and you're seeing things. But one of the major things with Berlin Brandenburg is it doesn't feel like that. So it doesn't feel as if you're seeing a lot of things. You have the gates on the main level, and I had a bit of a look at those, and I was even able to see my Norse 787 parked at the gate. But again, one of those really interesting things about Berlin Brandenburg is while you can see your plane, and it logistically makes sense that you see it and you see the boarding gate where you're boarding, it doesn't actually mean that is where you're boarding. You will go on another hike to and a whole nother level of the airport to eventually board the plane in a separate zone. So the zone I was in was, I guess what you could say, was domestic or European flights. And I needed to go to the American section, which is also different to the international. I don't know if this is the permanent configuration. I didn't do enough research, and I'm not going to lie, I've not gone back to try and figure out what that was all about. So having explored all the different gates to take some pictures, I did make the hike back towards passport control for international flights, and that is still very much a work in progress. So I would say at least the domestic and European area does look nice and has all the adequate facilities, but just remember, if you're passing through Berlin on an international service, grab your food or anything you may need before you go into the international area. As immediately once passing through that passport control, you'll know that there's construction everywhere, and then you're followed by probably one of the longest hallways I've seen in an airport that doesn't really have anything bar a news agency. A lot of the shops there were just closed, period, or not even open, or not constructed. So, like I said, it's not the newest, it isn't the oldest terminal in the entire world, but just keep that in mind. So it was a bit of another long walk. We went in the opposite direction to where all the other international gates were. There was a... I'm trying to think what flight there was. Could it have been Qatar Airways? I'm not too sure. But anyway, there are a couple of international flights going out. Not very many. Berlin's not the busiest airport in the world, but they did have a couple of international flights. But I was going the complete opposite way. Towards, I can't remember what gate it was, but then by the time I made it there, which was quite a significant time it took to walk, then found out that we had almost like another passport security checkpoint, which was only for the people boarding. I guess it's a US service. At that time, it was only North Atlantic, do you know what I mean? But I guess it was because we were the US and went through that and then went into our own little, past some doors, and it was our own little boarding area, which was for North Atlantic. And now I was looking at the aircraft basically from above, and you'll see all of this in the flight review that's going out in a couple of days. Or if you're listening to this, it may already be out. Just check out Globetrotting at DJ's Aviation and you'll be able to see if it's there or not. But now we were looking at it from above. So basically I'd climbed up, I would say maybe two stories, and I was now looking at the plane from above. And the funniest thing when it came to boarding, but before I get to boarding, we were handed out a COVID-19 vaccination form, which shocked me, really, really surprised me that of all my travels and all the places I've been, I was having to fill in a COVID form because I was traveling to the US. And if you know the news and you've been keeping up, especially in 2020, you'll know that US were probably the least restricted in a lot of parts, and had a pretty relaxed attitude. And I was quite surprised that not even leaving Australia did I have to show anything regarding COVID. I thought that was pretty much done when it came to traveling, but no, I still had to do something when I was leaving Berlin and fill it in for the US. Whether they even look at it is another question. It's probably a legal requirement that they need to hand out this form. But still, I'm not going to lie, it surprised me, as I did think, wow, I didn't think we needed to show this anymore, because I'm trying to think the last time I actually had to show it would have been probably in February 2022 was the last time I had to get a test, like a PCR test before flying. Gosh, that was such a scam, the amount of money they were charging. Anyway, I'm pretty sure I've ranted about that in other podcasts. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was February 2022 was the last time, and I had traveled twice since then and didn't have to show anything, at least all the way up until this point of this trip. So I was quite surprised, to say the least. And with all that being said, I filled that in, and by the time it was boarding, it was a very quick by the time I arrived, filled in the form, and we started boarding. And I don't know whether that was because it took so long to walk there that I wasted so much time. Probably not, though. I just think we did board the aircraft earlier than expected, which I was all for, because that would mean hopefully no delays on leaving on time. I didn't actually have a connection to make in JFK. I just had an overnight layover, so I was not too fussed if we were a little bit late. There was no real concern there, where normally I have those tight connections, as you know, and normally I'm stressing because I'm like, okay, I only had an hour, now I've got 30 minutes, 20 minutes, oh yep, not making this flight, wait, maybe I have 30 minutes. So it was nice that at least I didn't have another flight immediately after arriving into JFK, because the JFK arrival was scheduled for like,
I want to say 10 p.m. or 9:40 p.m. around about there. So with that being said, boarded the aircraft and did the funny thing because, you know, you're two stories up. So what do you need to do? You have to go down the ramp two stories. And eventually, where do you end up? Well, at the same level that I was viewing the aircraft on the ground, which you can also board from. But naturally, this gate is also meant for, I guess, domestic and European services too. And they've got gates that can be used either way. So if they want to make it a international or US flight, they can from above and block off the European and domestic side of things, or they can do vice versa, which is pretty cool, I must say. It does feel funny going down the ramp like over and over and over again, eventually then making it to the jet bridge, but it was great views of the massive storm that was coming. Yes, it had basically started downpouring by the time... What has happened to my voice? I apologize. I've literally just woken up, so that might be why my voice is being a little bit weird. Either way, there was a massive storm coming in. I didn't know if this was going to play havoc with our departure, but by the time I actually reached the gate, it was chucking it down with rain, like torrential rain. I felt a bit sorry for those out there, the ground crew that were working on aircraft, because it did not look pleasant out there, and I was pretty happy to say that I was actually inside in the warm. So we boarded the aircraft again, I've got to say, earlier than expected. So I was secretly hoping we may get away on time, but like I said, it wasn't the biggest deal if we didn't, and we didn't in the end, because one thing led to another, and it was snowing outside and raining, so we had basically sleet, snow, rain, everything in between, hail, just every poor condition you can imagine, and it really wasn't letting up. So in the end, every plane then had to be de-iced. So whether you're a British Airways, whether you're a Lufthansa, or whether you're North Atlantic, you did need de-icing, so that naturally takes time. I just kept laughing, thinking to myself, I'm taking the poor weather of snow everywhere I go, having most recently spent a really, really cold winter in Canada with lots of snowstorms. I just thought to myself, I can't escape it, because it was actually, believe it or not, a beautiful day when I was up on the viewing deck. Yes, there were signs of a storm coming, but largely the sun was out and it was nice. Again, by the time I boarded the aircraft, it was a completely different story. In the end, we got away, I think, 45 minutes late, purely down to issues with the weather and then de-icing. So in the end, I think we'd already spent nearly 2 hours sat on the plane by the time we'd had that early boarding played in. So it gave me a lot of time to review the overall product of North Atlantic. And remember, they're a low cost. So very similar, if you will, to a Scoot. They charge very low prices, and then if you want extras, you pay additional on top. Whether that be a priority seat, whether you want to pay a meal, priority boarding, another checked baggage. All those little things do eventually add up per ticket, and that's why some people then jump the gun and just pay for a premium. The one thing I noticed about Norse was, compared to competition, at least at surrounding airports, even if I wanted all the accessories, which I didn't buy, I think I only bought checked baggage and priority boarding because I wanted to do the flight review, it was still hundreds, probably like $400, €500 at the time of booking, cheaper than that full service, which is just crazy to think about. That's a lot of money that is being saved just for the small inconvenience, which wasn't to me an inconvenience. Maybe if you're with a family, it is. I think it's probably easier for solo travelers or even just couples to catch a train up to Berlin and then fly across to JFK. So with that being said, the product for a low-cost airline was really surprising, and I say surprising in the best way possible. There was an IFE. It's probably the best IFE I've come across. Not for everything on it. I will admit that other airlines have more selection. But in terms of response and the overall aesthetic and the way it was organized, it's the simplest IFE I've come across. And I think that if you're not familiar with in-flight entertainment systems, maybe you're a little bit older, it's one of the more inviting systems I've come across that doesn't feel overwhelming when you launch it. I know some of them can be pretty overwhelming. I'm thinking back most recently to Air Canada. Now, Air Canada's system has a lot, and that's fantastic, but it is a little bit overwhelming if you wouldn't know too much about IFEs and it's your first time. My partner really hasn't been all that familiar with IFEs, and look, she's not exactly 50 or 60. She is part of this tech age like myself, and she was even a bit confused about where different things were. during our flight and I would have to show her. So I can't imagine for someone that really doesn't have any idea, but the Norse Atlantic one was very, very inviting. The crew were really nice. I would basically describe the crew as people that wanted to be there rather than it being their job. Yes, it's their job and yes, they're being paid, but it genuinely felt like the crew all wanted to be there and were really enjoying themselves, and that certainly played off in terms of their service, their welcoming nature, and making the flight a really fun experience. The flight was a bit of a red eye, but wasn't at the same time. It was purely a red eye because of the time of the year, so we were chasing the sunset. Well, when I say sunset, we were chasing dusk, more like it, for I would say 50% of the flight. Because we left Berlin at 7 p.m. and arrived in New York at 10 p.m. So you're chasing dusk for most of it. If we were flying now, say in the summer, well then obviously I think it'd be a little bit different and you'd probably be chasing the sunset for most of it and would only really have dusk and then a little bit of darkness by the time you arrive into JFK. With that being said, there was a meal service, which I didn't realize I was getting a meal, but because I think I had bought priority boarding, or maybe because I checked a baggage, it was either one or the other, you automatically got a meal service, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean, I didn't pay specifically for the meal service, it was just because you had bought an extra that then they give you a meal, and I'm like, well, that's pretty good value for money. Normally on other low-cost airlines, even if I bought boarding or bought the bag drop option, you would then still need to pay extra for the meal, but as part of this, I was getting one meal of two. The other meal was going to be another dinner as we were arriving, and I was just like, well, it's fine, like I don't need to eat anything, I'll just have the one meal. The meal was really good. I'm trying to remember what it was, and I'm going to scroll down my photo album to have a look and tell you. It was salmon with potato and vegetables with a ice cream and a roll. Honestly, really, really nice. Absolutely no complaints there. A very good meal, and again, it's a low cost, so it wasn't like I was expecting it, period. So it was very nice to then be able to still see a meal. Be served, but it wouldn't have been the end of the world if I hadn't got that at all. One of the highlights, though, of the flights was the approach path into New York JFK. So while we were approaching, we saw, of course, all the lights outside, but inside the cabin, Norse Atlantic's really turned the 787 into a bit of a party vibe and party atmosphere. I say that because they turned the LED lights into a bit of a rainbow effect. I believe I published this video on Twitter, so some of you may have seen it, but if you haven't, you're going to see it in the flight review that's coming out in a couple of days, and I don't want to spoil too much, so I'm not going to describe it perfectly other than a rainbow effect, but safe to say, it was a really, really, really fun experience, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and they didn't do it too long before it, say, became annoying, but it was still really nice. Arrival into New York JFK, pardon me, was at 9:52 p.m. local time, and I was interested to see how cold it was going to be in New York, as naturally it hadn't really warmed up there yet, and yes, I can confirm it was a little bit chilly. After that, I had to go about getting a Uber or taxi or shuttle to my hotel that I was staying at for the night. That was easier said than done, as New York JFK is undergoing a lot of construction, and as a result, it's pretty hard for any cars to actually get into the drop-off pickup area, and then you have people that park there when they're not meant to, and then it becomes an absolute crap show with just cars parked everywhere, people trying to scam you on taxi rides, your actual ride not being able to get in. So I think I was waiting there for 40 minutes in the end for the Uber that I'd called. I felt sorry for the driver. It's the unfortunate reality, though, but he gets a good pay, I hope, out of it, because it's really expensive when you're traveling from airports not very far. And then arrived at a pretty cheap 3-star hotel for the night, just for a bed to sleep in, and woke up early to get some breakfast, and then headed back off to JFK for another flight, and that is where I'll leave it. So you don't know where I'm headed next unless you've been keeping up to date with me over on Twitter, but otherwise you won't know. So I'll leave you for another week now. Say thank you very much for listening, and next weekend I'll pick up where I left off on this one, taking a look at my next flight, which is on an aircraft type I've never flown on, so it was very exciting to tick this one off. You can try and figure out which one it is, and I would say place your guesses in the comments, but unfortunately that's not really something you can do given the fact that Spotify and Apple Podcasts hasn't really worked in an interaction feature for podcasts, which is something I would love to see. I would love to see it, you be able to interact on podcasts maybe a little easier so I can communicate with those that listen maybe strictly to the podcasts and have no idea what else I do. But maybe we'll see. Maybe there'll be a feature one day in the future. That being said, thank you very much for listening. Take care and be safe, and I'll see you next weekend. Or if you watch the videos, you'll probably hear from me in a couple of hours.
And a very warm welcome to your destination. Please keep your seatbelt fastened for the following. This has been the DJ's Aviation Podcast, one of the most unique podcasts on the internet, offering up your one-stop shop for all things aviation, from news to incredible stories detailing trips worldwide. Leave a review and follow the podcast on your preferred streaming platform. For onward connections, check us out on Twitter at DJ's Aviation or the show notes to join our partner Discord server, see the website, and more. And we'd like to thank you sincerely for listening, and we look forward to seeing you back on board shortly for another episode of the DJ's Aviation Podcast.